You're listening to the National Pulse on SAFM.
Okay, so it's been a busy time for the IEC. It's also been a busy time for the MK party. You know, in, out, suspended, expelled, and then accusations around the fact that many members of the MK party have been registered illegally, so to get the numbers required to be able to contest this, their first ever election. So let's try and understand it, what's happened, but also the role of the IEC and are there holes they need to close up? Let's get the thoughts of Tessa Dooms, who's a political analyst and director of the Rivonia Circle. Tessa, good chatting to you as always. You're live on the National Pulse.
Hi, thank you for having me, Ashraf.
Thank you. So firstly, what do you understand by what has happened around the issue of, you know, forged or irregular registration within the numbers of people required for the MK party?
Well, there's an accusation that one of the MK party members in the Western Cape has come forward to say that he and others have forged signatures that were required for the MK party to be able to contest on the ballots. Now, this comes from on the back of the new electoral laws that do state that parties that are not represented in parliament that want to be on the ballot need to collect between 15,000 signatures if they want to be on the national ballot only, and all the way up to about 60,000 if they want to be on the national and all of the 9 provincial ballots. And so the IEC requirement is that a party would get the names, the ID numbers of registered voters, and then their signatures. What the person who is coming from the MK party is saying is that they got names and ID numbers from databases and forged the signatures. So those are accusations that have been made that are yet to be tested or proven. And of course, this is also somebody who has been expelled or suspended from the MK party. There's no clarity on that, which also raises questions about the veracity or credibility of those claims. But that is what has been put up to question, and now the IEC needs to be able to answer as to what they will do in response to these allegations. Mm.
And has the IEC said anything? Have they commented on this busy Monday?
So we haven't seen official comment from the IEC in the form of a press statement. We've seen a response that they gave to the Mail and Guardian, which was a generic response that said they have not gone through any formal processes of checking the legitimacy of each signature. They have checked that the ID numbers are of registered voters, but they do not have a mechanism to check that the signatures are from the people from those ID numbers. And also that they think it's the responsibility of Parliament to deal with the question of forgery rather than theirs. That is as much as they've said in a passing comment. We've not seen a formal statement or press conference from them on these issues. And the EFF, incidentally, has also raised questions about Bosnia's signatures and whether those are legitimate. So I think the IEC has got now multiple issues that have been brought to its table around the questions of signatures in the last week.
So, I mean, you made the point that the accusations around these being forged signatures come from an aggrieved member. So we just parked that aside, right? Which meant if that person didn't do his own form of whistleblowing, then we would not know about this. So what does that then say about the checks and balance of the IEC regarding or any signatures?
Well, I think questions need to be asked of the IEC about what processes they have followed. It is an extraordinary large number of signatures that would have come from over 100 parties that had submitted. So I do think it does raise questions about what the IEC's processes are. And I think the best thing and the most responsible thing for all of us to do is ask these questions of the IEC and ask them to give us answers. It is important that we know that, you know, all of the parties that are participating are doing so credibly. And it is important that everybody feels that way before the election, so we don't go into an election and find ourselves after the fact with these issues still lingering. The IEC does have a responsibility to deliver a credible, trusted process. And the signature requirement, although the time for the signatures is passed, in terms of the timetable of the election, it is still something that should be of concern to the IEC if things like these are raised, which means they must respond to it. Mm. I think anything beyond that is conjecture and is not helpful You know, we don't know the IEC's processes, so we must ask of them what their processes are. We've seen a number of political parties, up to about 11 court cases to the electoral court, questioning the IEC on its processes, and the IEC has won all of those court cases except the one on the MK, on the candidacy of Jacob Zuma that they're now taking to the Concord. So they clearly have shown that they are willing to answer those questions in a court of law, and I think that they should be willing to do so in the court of public opinion as well.
And I mean, certainly we will we'll get hold of the IEC, you know, if not today, then tomorrow, different angles. So this, here's the last thing to you, Tessa. You know, it is understandable that we're going to get people calling in and texting us and tweeting us and saying, you see, this puts such a cloud around our elections, not just this one, but so many other cases. What are your thoughts? I understand from arm's length here, right, around the overall credibility of the IEC in terms of its sense of fairness, but also in its ability to deliver a free and fair election.
Well, we are now in our seventh election that we're going into, and the IEC has not given us a reason in the six previous national elections, the five previous local elections, or the by-elections that have been there. We've also had the backup of the Electoral Court to help us. And in this instance, the IEC is going even a step further to the Concord. And so I think the best that we can ask for in an election is credibility that is shown through transparency, a willingness to answer, a full disclosure in terms of information. And I think it's also up to political parties and members of the public, if they feel aggrieved on an issue, to be able to make those issues transparent, provide evidence, and for the IEC to be tested about that in a public way. I think that that in itself is about credibility. The IEC's willingness to still engage shows that there's still transparency and credibility. And I think until we've reached a point where we feel like the IEC is disengaged or is being disingenuous, I think we shouldn't be bemoaning the election's credibility unless we have real solid evidence that the IEC is no longer playing ball. The IEC has not shied away, and I think it's up to us and the media and everyone to ask the right questions and demand these responses so that we can create a sense of calm and that people can trust that the IEC is doing their level best. These are new processes. They were not created by the IEC. They were created by Parliament as rules and processes. And so the IEC is trying to make those processes work at a practical level, given the time that the President has set for when the election is.
Okay, and I think that is a point well made. Tessa Dooms, thanks for your time. As always, the director of the Rivonia Circle, but also a political analyst, an important voice here in the build-up to election 2024.